From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. As Valentine's Day was approaching, we were trying to figure out who would make the best DJ for our Valentine's Day show. I've been listening to a lot of Roxy music lately. There's a box set that just came out from this incredibly creative band, most notably from the 70s and 80s. Very romantic songs. Brian Ferry has this nice deep croon and is a fantastic songwriter, especially love songs. And then I got one of the most surprising records of the year, maybe one of the most surprising records in a number of years. It's by the Brian Ferry Orchestra, and it's called The Jazz Age. And it reimagines Roxy music and the music of Brian Ferry as a 1920s instrumental jazz band. And then I found out Brian Ferry was coming to New York to talk about his record just before Valentine's Day. So I went up to the NPR New York Bureau, met Brian Ferry, and asked him to pick some of the love songs he grew up on. On this edition of All Songs Considered, Brian Ferry plays DJ. Welcome, and thanks for doing this.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, the new record's such a joy, and I'm going to play some of that. But being Valentine's Day and all, I thought we should talk love songs, and you brought some to the table.
Why not?
But yeah, what else is there?
Yeah, indeed.
I was trying to think of, you grew up in England, a time where, what years would be the time of music that you'd remember? Would the 50s be your, like, early childhood?
That's when I started kind of, becoming obsessed by music, as one does. Funny enough, jazz at first, kind of New Orleans style jazz.
Really?
Which seems quite appropriate.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but a lot of British big bands.
Yeah, there was a kind of revival of traditional jazz music, from New Orleans, Louis Armstrong, King Oliver, this kind of thing. And I was, first of all, listening to the English bands, and then went to the source of the music and started my kind of journey as a fan of the music, you know, going from Armstrong to Duke Ellington, and then
such a rich tradition.
So many different people. I ended up with really being a huge bebop fan, really, Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie, who I saw. I didn't see Charlie Parker. I saw Gillespie when he was on tour when I was young, and Miles Davis, of course. But
something else took you away, because that's not the music you wound up doing. So.
And then in, I guess, 63 or 64, when the kind of rock music started becoming interesting, you know, I guess the Beatles came out, and all the greater kind of girl groups from America, you know, all those great Phil Spector records, and songs from the Stax label. I loved all of those records, Otis Redding and the Booker T and the MGs, all those people. I saw them, the whole Stax Roadshow, when it came to England.
And those roadshows,
just before Otis died, and that was a huge kind of epiphany for me, seeing that. I hitchhiked from London, from Newcastle down to London, and I was a young student. I thought, after seeing that, I thought, I'd like to do this. So I kind of got more interested in actually doing something myself.
Can you remember some of the early songs that were about love?
Well, speaking of Otis Redding, I mean, That's How Strong My Love Is, which is a beautiful song, and beautifully performed by him and the kind of Stax band. I eventually covered it, actually, on an album I did called The Bride Strip Bear.
Yeah, great.
And I did a version of that, which is one of my better efforts in the cover. You have to kind of love a song if you're going to cover it, you know, and you've got to have a feeling for it. And I loved the feeling of that song. But his original version is amazing, and these wonderful horns, Steve Cropper's guitar, and his wonderful voice.
Let's give a listen to some of Otis Redding's That's How Strong My Love Is.
If I were the sun way up there, I'd blow with love most everywhere. I'll be the moon when the sun goes down, to let you know that I'm still around. That's how strong I love you. Whoa. That's how strong I love you. That's how strong I love you, baby.
The rainbow after the tears are gone. How do you write it?
It's poetry, isn't it?
Yeah, how do you do that? So when you sing a song that somebody else has written, is it the song in your heart? Is it somebody in mind and love in your heart? Or
I guess so. I think it's a distillation of feelings of that you've had over the years and different, not usually one moment. You know, it's usually a kind of... it's a few things that have kind of gathered together, and images flash into your mind sometimes. Mm-hmm. If you're on stage and singing a particular song, and there might be a recurring image that you felt before, you know, you've seen before or felt before, it might be something new and quite random. You go, oh yeah, and singing those songs summons up images of that kind. Yeah.
And in writing songs.
That's the hard stuff. Writing songs is hard, I think.
Yeah, but writing songs about love.
Yeah, yeah. But you're always trying to find some other approach to it, and because you know that love is a great kind of universal feeling, and it kind of transcends, you know, all kinds of, you know, barriers of language and so on. Mm-hmm. And music, for me, always generally has to be about emotion, about feelings, and there's nothing stronger than the feeling of love, you know. And I'm not the kind of guy who's going to be singing about usually about wars or kind of paying the bills or mm-hmm. whatever. It doesn't interest me so much, but intimate songs are more interesting for me.
And trying to get at that, I've listened to a bunch of your songs with this conversation of mine and thinking about the... a lot of them are story sort of songs rather than I love you, baby kind of songs.
It's important to have the emotion in the song, but also to kind of summon up ideas as well, you know? I've always wanted to create it from the beginning with Roxy and doing the first songs, and wanted to kind of write sort of thoughtful music, you know, which sometimes provocative, sometimes not, but generally introspective. Mm-hmm. But trying to get a balance of feeling and thought.
I'm going to do two things here. I'll play a Roxy song.
Oh, good.
You have a preference? I was going to play one that made it to the new record as well as something from the old, and I could do Love is a Drug if that works, if that feels right.
Yeah, okay. Always a good
thing. Let's do that, and then we'll come and talk about the new project you're working on, too.
Okay, great.
And how you take a song like what we're about to hear and turn it into something about like what we're going to soon hear. Here we go.
Love is the drug I'm thinking of. Oh.
you remember where you were when you began to put the song together, both in location and frame of mind?
Well, I was living in Holland Park, kind of Notting Hill, in London, and we were kind of very busy at that period, making albums and touring, and it was always kind of deadlines, and we recorded that in Air Studios in London, mm-hmm. in Piccadilly.
But the line, I mean, just that line, "Love is a drug and I need to score," I would think that you might remember where and how. There's something about
it. It's an interesting narrative type of song where, we follow our hero as he kind of walks down to his car down the gravel drive and gets in, and he whizzes off in his sports car or whatever to a night on the town.
Absolutely.
And he's looking for love. He's looking for excitement and looking for his fix of love, whatever it might be. And
it's such a great
exciting
turn of
record
phrase.
To make.
Yeah.
And Chris Thomas and I had fun making the
creating
that the cars
car.
And footsteps and all that.
It never gets old, I have to say.
No,
it really holds up so good.
Great bass line by John Gustafson. Uh-huh. He used to play in one of those early Liverpool bands and called the Mersey Beat.
Oh, is he in there?
Yeah, he's a great player.
Did not know
and
that.
He played on some of our earlier albums.
So you take this idea. You've been kicking around these things, as you said, as a kid. You listen to music from the States, from British big bands. And I'm just going to play a little bit of this, and then we'll talk about the new record, The Jazz Age, and the Brian Ferry Orchestra. So this is the very same tune, just kind of a little different. That same character is walking on a very different street, right?
Yeah. He's more down on Bourbon Street at that point, with that lovely sound of the bass saxophone. It's good to hear some of these old instruments.
So tell me and tell us about how this came to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted for many years, actually, to do an instrumental album, and because I guess I'm...
For a singer,
I'm known as a singer primarily, but I am a songwriter also.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to kind of draw some attention to that fact and put the focus on me as the songwriter. And so last year we were compiling a box set of, I guess, to celebrate 40 years of making
which sounds great,
records.
By the way. No one's heard the Roxy Music box set.
Yeah, we did a good job.
Hearing those things that you did, much warmer.
And it's quite good to feel this kind of solid body of work.
Yeah.
And it makes a good door stop as well.
I haven't tried that yet.
Nice and heavy, I thought would be a great time also to celebrate, years of songwriting and maybe do an instrumental album. And I've been listening to a lot of early jazz, sort of going back to my roots, as it were. And so I thought, well, let's do it in that idiom, you know, in the start of the 1920s. And it seemed to work really well. The great inspirations were obviously kind of Louis Armstrong and that New Orleans early music, mm-hmm. and then also Duke Ellington, the kind of more sophisticated and more arranged and orchestrated stuff that he did in New York at the Cotton Club. You know, right. virtually the same time, a couple of years later, but all in the same period. And this track, funnily enough, seems to be like a synthesis of both things, because it has the arranged sort of, beautiful clarinets playing close harmony, which is a lovely kind of haunting sound, I think, and it suits the song. But it also has like this, the trumpet, which does have a kind of a New Orleans feel to it, which is the trumpet player we have is great. And he actually met Louis Armstrong when he was 7 years old. He played for him when he was seven and corresponded with the great man until he died, actually. So he plays really, really well in that style.
Now, did you imagine what these songs might sound like? I mean, it's one thing to say, it'd be great to do it in a period, but musically, I don't know your depth. Do you write? Do you orchestrate? Or can you just hear and then explain? How does this?
I tend to work, you know, with head arrangements myself. But Colin Good, who is my pianist and like the official arranger, he writes it all down because he's more musically trained than I am. I'm kind of self-taught and just a kind of fan who became a musician, really.
So what would that conversation sound like? I mean, how do you...
Would you choose the song. You know, I would say, how about trying, you know, say Love is a Drug.
Would you start on piano?
Because I wanted a few songs that were well-known in the mix, as well as some lesser-known tracks, and to try and get a comprehensive survey of... over the period of time I'd been writing, you know. We work out charts for chord charts, basically, for the band, and we basically all get together and playing in the same room, obviously, with actually vintage microphones, and generally just playing to the room mic mainly. But we had kind of individual mics for each instrument also, which they wouldn't have had in the old days. But sometimes you want to raise the solo and so forth. And we wanted it to sound distressed, to sound like a vintage record. Okay. It had more charm that way, you know, although we could have made it more high fidelity if we wanted. And we tried to get a balance, which we thought was
good for both. Is it mono, or is it
both.
Just very...
It's in mono. Yeah, we thought mono was good.
It totally works.
Yeah, back to mono. And the arrangements just kind of developed. And obviously, lots of room for improvisation, because the whole nature of jazz is that you improvise over a tune, you know. But the arranged bits sound good, I think. I really like those as well.
Let's pick another cut from it, and then we'll go back to some more. Well, these are love songs, too, but let's see. How about if we do... I'll do this one. Here we go. Thank you. Everyone I've played this record for just loves it, and I don't care the age range. What is it about this style of music, and particularly what you've done here?
I think there's a kind of an air of celebration about it, a kind of joyful feeling that when musicians play together and weave around as they do like this, and especially a track like this, which has a sort of Dixieland kind of flavor, you know, and it's very different from the original version, which is a song I wrote with Brian Eno, and I sent this to Brian, and so I was like, what do you make of this? And he loved it, actually, so I'm awesome. Very pleased that my co-writer enjoyed it, too. It's fun to work with these all these horns weaving around like that. This is kind of one of the less serious tracks, and it's interesting how you can do a song originally in one way and then come back to it and just look at it from a completely different angle, make it sound completely different. So now this is a kind of up type of song, whereas originally it was quite haunting and dark, I thought. I've always liked, you know, obviously in jazz, but also in kind of soul music, the use of horns has been an important kind of thing for me, you know, as a music lover. And Al Green, who played in Memphis with a guy called Willie Mitchell, who's producer and arranger, did some fantastic records, and very appropriate and suitable for kind of Valentine's Day mood, I think, is Al Green, a great kind of love voice.
Do you want to play Let's Stay Together?
I think Let's Stay Together is one of my favorites from his oeuvre.
Done.
Yeah, it's very, very moody stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever listened to Let's Stay Together on headphones and had the horns sharply in that one ear.
It's very stereo.
Yeah, very nicely done. He's a man who, talk about love and stories. Yeah. You know, it's such a tragic, tangled web that he had with a woman who was married, who wanted him to marry him, and doused him with hot grits in the shower and changed his life. It turned him to away from that kind of soul music to gospel music for a long while. She took her life. Such a tangled,
tragic world.
That love stuff's kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah, passion.
Yeah, passion. That's probably a better way to put it than just love. I was thinking of some of the songs that you've interpreted over the years of others, and I have to say that all the years I listened to Bob Dylan, I don't think that I really thought of him as a great writer of love songs, and I think I'm so wrong. And you did a version of Simple Twist of Fate would be one. You did a whole album of Dylan songs.
I did Make You Feel My Love as well, which is a great sort of straightforward love song, really simple. And sometimes I was drawn to his songs, you know, as a singer, because he had such a rich vocabulary, you know, great imagery in the lyrics and just wonderfully inventive mind, you know. The first song I ever covered, I guess, was Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, which was full of, you know, rich images, you know, a torrent of images, one after another. And as a singer, it was like really wonderful to sing those songs. And that was one of the most successful efforts.
Can I play Make You Feel My Love and listen?
Yeah.
Evening shadows and the stars appear, and there's no one there to dry your tears.
Yeah, it's wonderful stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Do you find it easier or harder to write about the upside or the downside of love? Is one in particular easier to embrace?
And always much easier for me to sing the sad songs and to write the sad stuff, really.
Why do you suppose?
It's more, I don't know, I think that the kind of moments when I kind of feel more creative is when I'm feeling, I don't know, introspective and maybe a bit sad. And it's usually just a kind of quite a lonely occupation of writing. The great thing about music for me is that there are different aspects to the making of records and performance as well. I mean, when I'm in the studio, I've got a lot of people with me generally, you know, co-producers,
or
engineers, musicians, and it's a lot of interaction going on. But when you're there as the songwriter, you're generally, it's you and the piano in the dark, and that's when sometimes the sad thoughts and feelings come, you know. And those are the things that, for me, always tend to make the best songs. Because, as I said before, it's emotion is the kind of driving force of music, I think.
Do you sit at a piano? Do you hold an instrument?
I sit at. I've got a. If I'm in Sussex, in my house there, I've got this nice old Steinway piano, and it's a bit battered, but it's a beautiful sound. And I very rarely record it. Actually, I should do that more often. But it's
you remember though.
Oh yeah, it's a great sound.
I mean, you remember if you try an idea.
Oh well, then I actually use cassettes.
Yeah.
which are my favorite kind of form of hi-fi. Even.
So do you have boxes and boxes of cassette tapes, boxes of cassettes.
I'm afraid so. Yeah. And so I stick a cassette in. And
that's
hope.
So funny.
Yeah. if I think it's worth recording, I think, oh, this sounds all right. Yeah.
And how about the words? Are you a longhand writer? Have you ever tried a computer?
Both. No. Typewriter.
Typewriter or a longhand.
Yeah. Not computer.
Yeah.
Computers and me don't really get along that way.
I see.
But
I've been having this conversation with people. The three different ways you might do it. One is to handwrite, typewrite, or a computer. We'll leave the computer out because that doesn't happen to you, but do you find different things come out, different parts of the brain work? Is there any...
Well, you tend to write quicker if you're doing it with a pencil, but there's a lot of wasted paper being scratched out and thrown away. But, by the time you get to the typewriter, then you're starting to be a bit more sure of what you're writing, and the ideas are more formed, and so you think, I think I'll start typing it up and see what it looks like, see if it stands up.
Thanks. Brian Ferry, you want to pick another tune for our Valentine's
Maybe out there? Maybe Aaron Neville.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's such a beautiful voice, and I think if you want to going to have a love song, you're going to have a beautiful voice, and he's certainly got that.
We'll play Tell It Like It Is.
Tell It Like It Is.
Awesome.
If you want something to play with, go and find yourself a toy. Baby, my time is too expensive, and I'm not a little boy. If you are serious, don't play with my heart. It makes me furious. But if you want me to love you, then baby, I will. Girl, you know I will. Tell it like it is. Don't be ashamed. Let your conscience be your guide. But I know deep down inside of me, I believe you love me. Forget your foolish pride. Life is too short to have sorrow. You may be here today and gone tomorrow. You might as well get what you want. So go on and live. Baby, go on and live. Tell it like it is. I'm nothing to play with. Go and find yourself a toy. But I tell it like it is. My time is too expensive, and I'm not your little boy.
Between the voice and that guitar, what lyricism.
It's fabulous, isn't it?
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. Aaron Neville, Tell It Like It Is, from 1966. The pop charts were pretty extraordinary that year. I mean, there's so many good songs, and
it's a great period for music.
Such a wide variety. I think there's maybe a wider variety of music that is out there now, but I'm not sure you could say that in the scope of things people listen to at once, maybe the same scope. You could hear, novelty records like the Singing Nuns, and then you could hear the Beatles, and then you could hear some psychedelia, and then you could hear Aaron Neville, and it'll be on the same station within an hour.
Yeah. And great, incredible variety of very high-quality music, yeah.
Yeah, good period. I like that. If you look back just a handful of years, there were a number of girl groups, and the first girl group to have a number one hit of that rock and roll style, you picked the Shirelles.
Well, it is a song by Goffin and King, which I just thought it was one of the great songs, It's such a beautifully crafted song.
We're talking about Will You Love Me Tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, and the girl's voice, Shirley of the Shirelles. It's just a very haunting voice for me, and it's just a perfect pop record, really.
And the songs with questions?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, always good to have a question.
Yeah.
I always thought one of the great names for any band was Question Mark and the Mysterious.
That's right.
I wish I'd thought of that.
Here we go. Let's listen to Will You Love Me Tomorrow. Marking well, the song's playing on those string arrangements.
Yeah, beautiful string arrangements, and the the girls in the background. It's very charming, no?
Yeah, and there wasn't much like that in sound. I mean, I was just listening to this weekend. One of the Andrew sisters passed on, and there was a fantastic show. On in D.C., Rob Bamberger puts on this Hot Jazz Saturday Night show every Saturday night for the last 25 years. And so he just did a Andrew Sisters evening. And if you haven't listened to the Andrew Sisters in a while, it's just a joy to hear. And you hear the influence where that came from and that innocence,
innocence
in the late 30s and the early 40s and their interpretation. And then you hear the Shirelles. It's 20-something years apart, but...
still has the same vibe, yes.
Yeah, just fantastic. That's the Shirelles. On the Jazz Age project, are you going to take this band out on the road?
Well, yeah, we have dates already set in Europe.
In Europe.
Yeah, in Europe, yes.
And we're about closer to here.
Well, it'd be nice to... We have such a big operation of so many musicians because we have to get a sponsor. So if you've got to know anybody, then,
Everybody out there, let's help Brian. Kickstarter.
We're doing shows in Europe in the summer and in the autumn. And I'm going to take the jazz musicians as well as my rock band. So it'll be we'll have hopefully the best of both worlds, which will be great.
When this band is playing, what are you going to be doing?
Well, I will actually sing a few of the songs with the jazz guys, and also I'll be obviously singing all the other songs too when we get the electric guitars wheeled out and singing as well. it's going to be a really fun year for live shows for me. So
that's awesome.
I'm looking forward to that.
Well, you look wonderful, and it's great to have you here.
It's great to be here as well. Thank you.
What do you want to go out on?
Me.
Thank you.
Well, there was once one of my favorites from the Jazz Age album was actually the most recent song, which was from the Olympia album I did a couple of years ago. And it was interesting for some song that was quite recent to me to be transcribed into this older form. This is it, Reason or Rhyme.
I'll play that when you're gone.
Yeah, so I'm walking out the building.
Brian Ferry, his new record, the Brian Ferry Orchestra, is called The Jazz Age. I'm Bob Boylan. Happy Valentine's Day. For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered.